Pete Oakes, you guys already know him. I really don't need to say a whole lot other than he runs Capital 3. They're in energy, manufacturing, and education. He's married to Deb, has two children, Austin and a daughter, 8 grandchildren, and he likes to ride motorcycles. Give him a hand. And in case he doesn't mention it, his book is out there, pre-release copy of The High Impact Life, so grab it on your way out.
Great. Well, it's great to be here. I'm sure the first question you want to know is, when's a guy in a white button-down shirt going to get a tattoo? It may be a while, but probably the second question you want to know is, what happened to Louis Gutierrez? Okay. Well, I can tell you Louis is doing really well. He's a guy on the left there, okay? And the other fellow is a fellow by the name of Tommy Galindo. Louis has been out about a year and a half. His first year out, he went to work for another tattoo shop. And he called me a couple of weeks ago and said, Pete, I want to just give you an update on where I am in business, because over the last year we worked with him for, you know, to get a business plan put together. And if you'll look back there, you'll see on the top left-hand corner, the name of his company is Redemption, Inc., okay? And so Louis said, Pete, during the first 12 months when I worked for the other guy, I grossed $90,000 in revenue, and I had $15,000 in expenses. And now I've been in my own business for 3 months, and I want to tell you that I am, it looks like I will gross $300,000 with about $40,000 in expenses. And I have to just read this to you, because I got out of the blue, I got a text from Louis last night. And give me just a minute here. He said, God is so good, Pete. Again, thank you so much for believing in me. I'm about to embark on a huge journey that will really change our business, impact lives, and best of all, we'll get to teach people about the triple bottom line. Louis is an amazing guy. He and Tommy are both Christians. Tommy was an inmate that was in for murder, was accomplice to murder. So Tommy started a barbershop. He's got 6 guys working for him, and Louis's in the back with a tattoo parlor. I was in there the other day. Literally, I walked into, I had a couple of friends in town, and they wanted to know about Louis. So we walked into this tattoo parlor, barbershop thing, and here we walked in, 3 business guys with white shirts, and we didn't look like the clientele that was in there, and we literally sucked the air out of that place for about 30 seconds. And then one of them said, well, one of the guys in there said, well, what can we do for you? And I said, well, we're here for a haircut and a tattoo. And so I said, no, I'm really looking for Louis Gutierrez. So Louis came back. We went around and found Louis. And, of course, Louis gives me a big hug. And there's probably 30 people in there. And they're looking, what is that guy and this guy doing hugging in the middle of a barbershop? This is just crazy. But I got to tell you, Christ can really do some crazy things in our lives. So I want to talk about the purpose of business. I want to take just a few minutes and philosophically, you heard a lot of our philosophy, how we do business. I want to take about 5 or 10 minutes and explain philosophically how we look at business. Then I want to take about 10 minutes and just go through a few details of how we create economic, social, and spiritual capital. Maybe that will give you an idea of practically how we do it. So what is the purpose of business? You know, the conventional wisdom in business is that you're to maximize shareholder value. That's the purpose of business. And I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I think there is a much greater purpose than maximizing shareholder value. And that's what I call human flourishing. Let me read for you what I would define as the purpose of business. This is just a short thing written by Ann Bradley, who's an economist with Institute for Faith, Work, and Economics, and this is how she defines flourishing. There's a universal longing, a desire transcending tribe, tongue, and nation that sits at the core of every human heart. It's a desire for thriving, for blessedness, for fullness of life, for flourishing. What does flourishing look like then? It's when the wilderness becomes fruitful, It's when justice dwells. It's when righteousness abides. It's when people live peacefully. Flourishing is happiness. It's joy. It's fullness of life. It's wholeness. It's abundance. Flourishing seeks the welfare of the city. It promotes the common good. It radiates God's kingdom on earth. Flourishing is a thriving farm. It's a booming city. It's a cure for disease. It's a new technology. It's a beautiful song. It's a vibrant street mural. It's a loving family. It's a fun friendship. It's a deep relationship with God. It's living as an image bearer of our Creator. Flourishing means becoming everything we were created to be. I think the purpose of business is for us to be the catalysts for human flourishing. In business, we have the unique opportunity to be able to create economic, social, and spiritual capital. So let me define flourishing here for you. If you look at Genesis 2, 15 through 18, this is after creation but before the fall. It basically says this in verse 15. So God created man and put him in the garden to work it and tend it. So I think the first thing that is required for us to have flourishing is material possessions. And you will have those possessions if you simply work. The second thing in verse 18, it says, not good for man to be alone, so I'm going to create him a suitable helper. The second thing we need is deep, authentic relationships. God knew that, so he created us in community. The second thing we need to flourish is deep, authentic relationships. And the third thing in verses 16 and 17 says, oh, by the way, don't eat of the fruit of that tree over there, because then you'll know the difference between good and evil. I think what that's telling us is we need a purpose in life. We need a moral code by which to live. So if we're going to flourish, I think there are really only three things we need. We need sufficient material possessions. We need deep, authentic relationships. And we need a moral code. We need a purpose above and beyond ourselves that we can live by. So I would define a high-impact business as a business that creates economic, social, and spiritual capital. We have the ability to create material possessions for ourselves and for others by creating economic wealth, okay? We define authentic relationships as social capital, and we define the moral code as spiritual capital. I would elaborate on this just a little bit. I would tell you that I think flourishing requires a balance of those. In other words, you can be a millionaire and have no friends, and I don't think you're flourishing. You can have Jesus in your heart and love him with everything you have, and if you don't have food to eat, you're not flourishing. You can have lots of friends and lots of money and not have Jesus, and you're not flourishing, okay? So it takes all three of those. I think also that maybe the most important one of those is spiritual capital, because spiritual capital tells us how we create economic capital and social capital. I am an avowed free market capitalist. I believe it is the absolute best way to create economic wealth. And all you have to do is look at India and Hong Kong and China over the last 10 or 15 years. I was in India about a month ago, and the amount of wealth that is there astounded me, and it's because of capitalism. But you see, capitalism without a moral code results in greed. Capitalism with a moral code results in generosity. Government without God results in totalitarianism. Government with God results in freedom. And unfortunately, in our country, I believe that in the 60s, when the Supreme Court said, we need to take these things called the Ten Commandments, the moral code that America used to live by, and pull them off the wall. And it literally said in the Supreme Court document, well, somebody might look at them and read them and do them. Literally said that. So when we pulled God out of the system, there left the vacuum for a moral code. And so when you pull God out, that has to get filled with something. And I think G-O-D gets replaced with G-O-V, more rules, more regulations. And the ultimate thing is we lose our economic, political, and religious freedoms by doing that. So spiritual capital is absolutely essential to what we're doing. Let me talk about economics for just a moment. Let me ask you the question. What talent have you been given? And I want to talk about Matthew 25, parable of talents. We're all familiar with that parable, okay? So real quickly, the master was going on a trip. He calls in three servants. He gives one 5 talents, one 2 talents, and the other 1. The one with the 5 talent and the one with the 2 talent took them, and it said they took them and immediately put them to work, okay? The one that got the 1 talent buried it in the bottom of his tent. Here's what I think. Here are the 3 states that I think people live in. We live in poverty, wealth, or we have capital. Poverty is simply not enough. We don't have enough. We don't have enough food. We don't have enough spiritual. We don't have enough of Jesus, or we don't have enough friends. We're poor, okay? Wealth is we have enough. We have enough material possessions. We know Christ. We have good friends. I think what happened is the master gave his servants wealth. He gave 1 5, 1 2, and 1 1. What the ones that had 5 and 2 did was they took it and they said, I'm going to invest it. Capital is invested wealth. It's wealth that we're willing to put to risk. Okay? So the question is, what talent have you been given? What form of capital have you been given? And are you using it? Are you taking risk with it? If we look at this, I think there are 2 key questions here. The first question is, what form of capital have you been given? What if Billy Graham would have just sat in his study all day long, learned about Jesus, and never walked out of his study? He would have been spiritually wealthy, but he would not have been a spiritual capitalist because he didn't take risk with it. He didn't stand up in front of millions and share Jesus. So 3 forms of capital you have. You have potentially economic, social, and spiritual. What form have you been given? And are you taking risk with it? So as business folks, of course, I love the title of this conference, Real Business, Real Mission. I think too often we think it's either business or mission. And so we're light on business and we're heavy on mission, or we're heavy on business and we're light on mission. And consequently, maybe we don't do a very good job at all of them. And I think it's not business as mission, but maybe business and mission. We've got to do both of those for us to get where we want to get. And the last question there, am I hoarding or am I investing? We know about the parable of the rich young guy that had a bunch of barns full and he had a great harvest in Luke 12. And it said, well, I'm going to tear down those barns and I'm going to build more. And what did God say to him? You know, you're out of here. So are we taking the talent that we have in our business? We have relationship. As the leader of the business, you all are respected and you have already built in social capital. Are you using that platform to maximize your relationships with your employees? You have influence. And I think on the spiritual capital side, if we are believers, we have no choice but to obey the Great Commission. Let me talk just about economic capital for a minute. And I think the key question here is, how do we allocate the bottom line? Assuming we have a bottom line, and there's been years that I haven't had the bottom line, okay? But if we have a bottom line in our business, how do we allocate it? And I think there's really only 3 places where we can spend it. One is we can retain it in the business and grow the business. The second thing we can do is pay it out in dividends, either to investors or to ourselves for personal consumption. And the third thing we can do with it is invest it in spiritual or social capital creation. In our business, over the last 5 years, we retain about 50% of our earnings. We pay about 20%, 25% in taxes, and we give away about 20 or 25%. That has worked for us. How much you retain is going to depend on the type of business you're in. We have 2 types of businesses. We have a manufacturing operation, and we have an energy operation. In the energy operation, we have huge capital expenses up front, but then ongoing, we just get lots of net free cash flow coming off of that. So we don't have to reinvest much. So a lot of that gets given away, okay? On the other hand, is in our manufacturing business, We're buying equipment. We're funding inventory. We're funding receivables. So for us to grow, we have to retain some earnings. The biggest question we face as a business person each year is how much do we retain so we can grow versus how much do we give away now to the kingdom and make a difference? I think that's one of the biggest questions we have as business folks. Let me talk about social and spiritual capital creation for just a minute. And I have internal versus external there. In the 90s, when I came to understand, at the age of 40, I woke up and realized I'd been successful but not satisfied. And so during the 90s, in my life from the age of 40 to 50, I ran our businesses. We tried to make as much money as we could to give away. And then 9/11 hit, and our businesses, we came very close to bankruptcy. We dumped all of our cash. Our earnings went zero. Generosity stopped, okay? And that's when I really had a bout with God. At that point in time, I said, you know, how do we look at this differently? One of the things we did, I didn't want to give raises in the 90s to my employees because I wanted to maximize the bottom line so I could give more to Jesus. Now, what kind of, you know, what kind of sense is that? And so from now on, what we do is we maximize the economic bottom line. I would encourage you. I believe as good stewards, we need to try to maximize the bottom line. It's amazing what cash can do for the kingdom, okay? And you do that in the most fair, honest way you can. So don't, I had a young man today ask me, well, what do you think about making money? Is that a good, sure, if you're in business, we should do that. The servants doubled their money over a period of time, okay? We should do the same thing. So we take a portion of that bottom line and what we used to send externally, what we used to give to other ministries, we are now retaining about 25% of that internally. And I'll show you some examples of how we spend that money here in just a little bit. The social capital question. Here's the question I think we need to ask ourselves. Do you love your employee as you love yourself? Do they have the same benefits as you? Do they have the same vacation that you do? Do they have all the perks and things that you get to take advantage of? One of the best things I did, and you saw the other three guys that were on the video, 20-some years ago, all of us went to a conference, and one of the speakers challenged us with the question, how much is enough? Okay? We all walked out of that and began to poke each other a little bit and say, what's your number? How much is enough? We all took it as a net worth number. When we got to a certain amount of net worth, we actually 2 months later holed up for two days. We started on Friday and we said by Sunday, we're going to answer the question among the four of us, how much is enough? Sunday rolled around. We all said, okay, it's time to share our number. So one guy said 2 million, one guy said 5 million, one four, another six, whatever. Basically, what we'd done is taken the risk-free rate of 5% times $2 million. You get $100,000. I can live on that, right? So we slit our wrists and did this and said, when we get over that amount, we're going to come back every year and you're going to have to give it away, believe it or not. So the next year, we all came back. One guy was approaching it. Anyway, 3 or 4 years later, we all had substantially exceeded our how much is enough number. Unfortunately, we were... all of our wealth was built in these privately held companies. And so for us to give that away, as it were, we'd have to sell the company or give the company away or do something. We did not feel called to do that. As we began to dig into this thing a little bit deeper, why is the first 2 million mine and everything else is God's if I'm the steward? Isn't it 0-100? So what we did, here's the real question, I think. How much should you be paid to manage the assets God's given you? Hey, that's a fun one. So at that point in time, we said, what we're going to do is try to live middle-class lifestyles. So we all agreed to cap our lifestyle. This was 20 years ago. So I can tell you, the four of us meet every quarter. One of the guys put us on his board, so every quarter we meet. Once a year, we just got done with this about a month ago. We all went fishing together, and we spent 2 days together. We shared our financial statements with each other and made sure that we were living lifestyles that would be appropriate Okay? Accountability is absolutely essential. It's the best thing that I've ever done in my life because I don't have to worry about fancier cars or bigger homes or all this kind of stuff. Here are some ideas on social capital. As a leader, you must talk it and walk it. 7 years ago, I really became convicted that I'd been a closet Christian with my employees. They knew it, but they really didn't know it. So once a month, I agreed that I was going to get up in front of my employees and talk about our business and our values. And I'm going to show you our values map here in a little bit. And in the middle of that, there's this thing that says honor God. That's our first value. And everybody in our company knows this. I tell people, you don't have to honor God the way I honor God. But these are our values, and I talk about those. That has been one of the best things that has happened because it has forced me to walk the talk because I've stood up in front of them and made promises. A promise made creates hope. A promise kept creates trust. So when you make promises to your employees, make sure you keep those. The second thing is we have a goal. We want to be the best place to work in the state of Kansas. We just, you heard it on there. When I told the inmates, we're going to be the best prison in the United States, they just laughed me out of the place. They literally laughed. A third thing I would do is I would encourage you to create a social capital plan. Probably every one of you has an economic business plan. You know what market you're going, what products you're making, how much money you're going to make. But do you have a plan to socially pour and invest into your employees? And the second thing, or the last thing there is you need to measure it. I don't know if you're familiar with, is anybody familiar with the Net Promoter Score? Does anybody use that? It's a great tool, okay? There's also a Gallup Q12 questionnaire. You can give your employees, Gallup has 12 questions you give your employees, and they will tell you what they think of the company. There are questions like, has anybody talked about the mission statement in the last 4 months? Do I have a best friend at work? These kinds of things. 6 years ago when we started the Q12, we scored less than 50%. Last December, at our last annual, we scored 94%. And it was simply because we started looking out for our employees and said, this is what we need to do. Spiritually, what part do we play in the Great Commission? You see, I think there are three biblical mandates to economic, social, and spiritual capital. Economic capital, Genesis 1:21, God put us in the garden to subdue the earth and to work it, okay? That will create economic capital. The social capital is the great commandment, love your neighbor as yourself. And the third form of capital, spiritual capital, the great commission is we're to go and make disciples of all nations. So here again, create a spiritual capital plan, and I'll show you what some of that looks like. On social and spiritual capital, we measure inputs, we don't measure outputs. We don't say, we are going to have 50 people come to Christ this year. What we say is we're going to run these Bible studies, we're going to offer these mission trips, we're going to offer this library, we're going to have this chaplain available, we're going to do all these things. So they're inputs, and then we just pray like crazy that the outputs are really good, okay? The third one there, lead with economic, social, spiritual capital. This is what we found in the prison. I think too often, if we go back to the parable of the Good Samaritan, you had the guy that was beat up and laying by the side of the road. And here the priest and the Levite, the spiritual guys, came and it said they walked around him. But what did the Good Samaritan do? He came and he led with economic and social capital. He befriended the guy. He took him and he took him to the hotel and paid for his room. When we lead with economic and social capital, when we pay people well, when we give them good benefits, when they know we care about them, I was on the floor about 3 months ago and one of our employees had been there 20 years. I went by her and I said, Inez, how are you doing? Her husband had just died. Okay. He had had cancer for a number of years, and they had spent most of their savings fighting cancer. And I said, is there anything we can do? And Inez said, Pete, just don't lay me off of this job because I still have $5,000 to pay on the funeral bill. I hugged her and I said, don't worry about it. You've got a job. I walked upstairs to our CFO and I said, call the mortuary and pay for the bill. Folks, we have to take some risks. We have to take some social and spiritual capital risks and invest those things that we have available to us. Look for areas to serve, and boy, sickness and death and all those are great ways to do that. And another thing we've done in the last one there, match external funding with internal personnel. So the money that we spend outside, we try to partner with ministries. So we ask people, whether it's Habitat for Humanity, building houses, we get our people to go and work. So we'll fund it, but we get other people to go and be involved in that. And we found that to be huge. Let me just quickly wind up here, and I'm going to go through our companies very quickly here. We have manufacturing in U.S. prisons. We have manufacturing in Mexico. We've got about 250 employees down there that make stuff. We've got manufacturing in the U.S., and we've got a hydroelectric energy company in Honduras, and then we've got an education outfit in the U.S. So this is basically what our hydroelectric company looks like. So what you see here is a dam. We go up in the mountains of Honduras. We wear off the water. We take it, and we off to the left there, you'll see a desanding device. The water goes in it. We take the sand out of it, and then we put it in a pipe like this. That runs 3 miles along the side of a mountain. That's a 4-foot diameter pipe. At the appropriate time in the mountain, we turn that thing downhill, so we build up a lot of head pressure. So we drop this water 1,000 feet in a pressurized pipe. And at the bottom of that sits a turbine, which is the green thing you see there, and a generator, which is the white thing. And so we create enough electricity out of that for about 2,000 U.S. homes, okay, with that particular project. That's about a $9 million project to do that. We've got our second one in the works, and it's about a $40 million project, okay? So let me just talk about the economic capital in Honduras. 30% of Honduras has no electricity, so it was a huge incentive for us to go. 60% of their electricity comes from diesel fuel. So their average cost of electricity is 25 cents a kilowatt hour. You're probably paying somewhere between 8 and maybe maximum 12 cents. Honduras is the second poorest country in Latin America, so there's huge opportunity there. We've created 200 new jobs in building these projects. We had 100 on our first project. We're hiring 200 on our second project, and we'll pay them about five times what they normally make. They normally make about $1,000 a year, and we'll pay them $5,000 a year to work on that project. A financial return to our investors is 16% and up a degree or two. The government, we wholesale. We have a 25-year power purchase agreement with the Honduran government, so we sell all of their power to them. We sell it at 14 cents a kilowatt hour. They retail it at 22 to 25 cents a kilowatt hour. So the government's going to make $1 million on that project this year. And then we've, of one village, the GDP is up $800,000. When you put new roads in and you put energy to those, when you get electricity to these villages and a good road to get people in, amazing things happen. Social capital. We have social capital projects. We've electrified two villages. We've put a new water system in two villages. We've built 30 kilometers of new roads. We've rebuilt two schools. We've established a farmers cooperative. We've got about 300 farmers in this cooperative, and we're teaching them how to, you know, fertilize and, you know, all these kinds of things. We've saved 10 metric tons of CO2 annually, and we've partnership with a local school down there. The way we pay for those social capital things is we pay for the expertise and then the material, and then we always get the villagers to put the labor into it. So there's always a partnership in how we do that. Spiritual capital, we started the seminary, and about 2 years ago, we graduated 27 from there. We've currently got 56 students in that. 13 new churches have been planted out of that seminary. And we've rebuilt a couple of churches. We've just literally gone in and paid for the cost of redoing that. And then we partner with a local ministry. So they do church leader training, and they run a kids camp. The kids camp, 5 years ago, about 20% of the cost of the camp came from, was self-sustainable. 80% they had to rely on contributions. We just put our economic model in and worked with them. This year they had 105% of their operating costs coming in as revenue, so they're now self-sustainable. Let me just make a comment on this. a couple of ways I think we can do business as mission, or we can do mission inside of the business. One is for us to do it ourselves, and we do some of that, particularly in the prison, which I'm going to show you in just a minute. On particular cases, if there are other people that do it better than you, then partner with them. I think the best partnership is when a business person comes along beside a really good ministry person, and you understand each other and help each other. I think really great things have happened. We've seen that. It's becoming the gospel patron, as it were, for that ministry. Here are six of my really good friends, and these are six of the inmates that graduated from our seminary program about 2 years ago. All of them are murderers or accomplices to murders, okay? Most of them are going to be in prison a long time. They live in a desert of human flourishing, a desert of human flourishing, but they are flourishing inside of that desert. They have economic capital because they have a good job. They've got great friends, and they love Jesus and are coming to know him in very unique ways. We talk about economic capital in U.S. prisons. We employ about 180 inmates. We pay our inmates between $80 and $100 a day. They'll make 50 cents a day if they work for the state of Kansas. Our inmates become taxpaying citizens. 25% of their gross comes off the top for room and board. So if you make $10 an hour, $2.50 an hour goes back to the state to pay for your room and board. There'll be over $1 million. There was over $1 million last year paid by the inmates to the state of Kansas. We get the benefit of a variable workforce, and we don't have to pay, you know, there's no vacation, no health insurance, those kinds of things in prison. So that's basically our benefit. These guys pay restitution and child support. It's amazing the amount of money they send out. I was walking the line the other day in the prison, and I try to get in every 2 weeks, and I'll start at one end, and I just walk the line. And if I miss somebody, the inmate that I miss, he'll go up to the manager and say, is Pete mad at me today? He didn't talk to me. The importance of social capital. And I try to shake their hands, and I try to ask who they are and how they're doing. Anyway, one of them came up and he said, Pete, I want to tell you two things. One is I just finished paying off, because of this job, I just finished paying off $12,000 of restitution that I robbed a place and I got $12,000 and I just finished paying that off because of this job. The second thing is he handed me a graduation invitation from his daughter from college and he said, my job paid for this. And the guy was so, he was just weepy that he was able to do that. The average inmate leaves our employment with about $5,000, and that is a huge thing. Most inmates, they get a $50 bill when they leave and the clothes on their back, and that's it. Social capital. We give them job training skills. We have six guys that are so good at computer AutoCAD, computer-aided design, they will be leaving the next 3 or 4 years, and they will come out with jobs at $60,000, $70,000, $80,000. These guys are really good, and they're really smart. Family relationships, it costs 17 cents a minute for you to talk to your family when you're in prison. So if you're making 50 cents a day, you just have there is no social capital with your family. Our average employee probably spends $30 to $40 a week just on phone bills so he can have a relationship with his family. Discipline problems are down. If you have a DR, a discipline report, in the last 4 months, you can't work for us. Recidivism in the U.S. is about 65%. In Kansas, it's 35%. We've had a little over 50 guys leave our employ, and four of them have come back that we know of, okay? So we think we're under 10% recidivism. We fund reentry programs and local ministries. You saw them say, we have life lessons. We do finance, fathering, leadership. We're constantly pouring into these guys. The inmates have actually formed a club called the Seat King Club, and they're taking all the stuff they learn back in to their other inmates that don't have a job and teaching them. It's interesting. The guys that work for us are known as the one percenters because they make $100 a day and everybody else makes $1 a day. So our inmates working for us are they're known as the one percenters. We sent 75 guys to the Global Leadership Summit inside the prison. They piped it in, and it was just a huge benefit for those guys. Let me talk about spiritual capital and get this thing wrapped up here. We do monthly lunch with life lessons. We started a seminary program 4 years ago. 8 have graduated. We got 30 in there now. The seminary students are doing a lot of triage mental health counseling. 43% of the inmates in that prison have mental health problems. And you would too if you spent 12 hours to 18 hours a day in a 5x9 cell. It's just part of the deal. Over 50 inmates have come to Christ in the last year. The church in the prison has tripled. It's actually full. They won't let any more in because there's X amount allowed in the room. Because of that, we're building a church inside of the prison. The state of Kansas, this is a 130-year-old prison, and it's built around it's got a big center building, and the top floor of that is 7,000 square feet. And the state of Kansas has given that to us to build a new church and classrooms, et cetera, in there. So we're remodeling that for $1 million. Our company is going to fund half of that, and then we go out with matching grants, and we're close to raising the other other $500,000 to get that done. Company sponsors Bible studies. We try to regularly attend their church services. When folks with our employees, if we care for them outside of the workspace, I just think it says so much to them. And once again, as I talked to you about, we lead with economic and social capital. When you do that, the doors to spiritual capital fly open. They're asking us, why are you taking care of me? Why are you doing this for me? This is my second to last slide. This is the way we run business. This very simple triangle. You see the gray triangle is what we call our platform. We believe it's the purpose of business, to create economic, social, and spiritual capital. The four triangles in the middle those are our four values. We have very simply four values. We want to honor God. We want to serve people. We want to be excellent. We want to be good stewards. Anytime we make a decision in business, we had an opportunity to go to Mexico a few years ago, so we simply asked four questions. Does it honor God by going to Mexico? Does it really serve people? Can we do it with excellence? And are we good stewards of doing that? Even if we're going to buy a $1 million machine, we'll ask those four questions. It's what we call the four-way test. And of course, the one in the middle is our purpose, to honor God. The four triangles in the middle is what you and I as leaders should be responsible for. We should make sure that we honor God. That's our purpose. Our passion should be to serve, be excellent, be good stewards. And then I think this epitomizes John 15. I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I remain in you, you will bear much fruit. I am the vine, the black triangle. You are the branches of service, excellence, stewardship. If you remain in me and I remain in you, you will bear much fruit. You will bear economic, social, and spiritual fruit. I'll leave you with this. Our greatest fear should not be a failure, but of succeeding at something that doesn't really matter. You know, what is the purpose of business for us? Is it to maximize shareholder value, make our lives really nice, or is it to create flourishing? You all have been a great encouragement to me. Thank you.
Thanks, Pete. We got a couple questions for you. This is from Joshua Essek. Great work, Pete. Thank you so much for sharing. You mentioned the need to balance the amount of economic capital kept within the business to grow it versus the amount invested into the other types of capital. Do you have any principles or frameworks to ensure that balance?
Yes. Yeah, great question. I wish I could give you a formula for that, but I don't think there is a formula for that. That's up to you and God, okay? And I think it depends on what kind of business you have. So how much, if you have a very capital-intensive business, you're going to have to retain more. But you see, are you making money to give it away, or are you running the business to impact people, primarily your employees, your vendors, and your customers? Though that should be the front line. I think so often, for years, I walked by my employees, my vendors, and my customers and made as much money as I could so that I could send it overseas or wherever I was going to send it. And our first line has to be our employees, our customers, and our vendors. So even if you don't give any money away, I think you should give at least 10% away. Just my opinion, okay? I think it's a good starting place. But even if you gave nothing away, if you ran the business on biblical principles and impacted your employees, your customers, your vendors, you know, you're doing fine, I think.
Is there a way for people to access the documentary that was shown?
Yes. So I got talked into that documentary by a young film producer that I knew, so I really had nothing to do with that. He produced that. But if you go to dealmakersfilms.com, it's a website made by the producer. You can download it and watch it for $3 or $4 or $5 or buy it for $15 or something. So, yeah, you can get access to it.
Yeah, I think it's $2.99. What's your next project?
We're looking at an outdoor adventure company, and I think it fits very well with our education piece. And so I think really when you get a small group of business people together and spend 3 or 4 days in God's creation, having a lot of fun, I think you can get to the bottom of some real issues quickly.
Yeah.
And so we really view that as a good business, but as a good mission.
Good. And that leads into our last question. What advice would you kind of talked about this band of brothers, these three other guys that you meet with. What advice would you have to someone that doesn't have that? How should they go about it? How important is it?
Yeah. So let me talk about mentors and for just a minute. So I've got three sets of mentors. I have older mentors. I have two of them. They're 90 years old. They've been walking with me for over 40 years. Okay, I've not made a major decision in my life without asking one of these two gentlemen. Very powerful thing to do. The second thing you need is a mentor that's a peer mentor, that's someone your age, okay? I think the third thing you need is a younger mentor, maybe 20 years, at least in the next generation. The old guys will give you a historical look at what's coming. The peer guys will give you a look at real time. This is where you are, and this is the way they see it from your perspective. The young guys, I have two young guys, and they're in their 30s. One of them, my son, okay? They give me a look at what the future's going to be. So I think it's very important to do that. I have these three other guys that I meet with on a quarterly basis, okay? And those are, they're mentors, but they're probably more accountability guys. And we've been meeting for 20 years. If you don't have somebody like that, begin to pray for that. The accountability that they have brought, the encouragement. Every time I go to our quarterly meetings, I just come back with a new idea, a new step in my, you know, a new spring in my step. It's just the best thing. So whatever you do, figure out how to find somebody that you agree with. There are other business guys. We invest with each other. We ask, you know, we give advice to each other. We're very close to working together. So I would really encourage that.
All right. Well, let's end our night together by giving glory to God for the stories that we've heard today of the great things that he's doing around the world. Thank you, God.